WST Podcast, your source for West Coast sports. We have a very special guest with us today, Kyle A. Madsen. He is part of and the managing editor of the Niners Wire at USA Today, as well as a co-host of the Candlestick Chronicles. Kay Wynn, what do we talk about?
We talk about the Niners offseason. Rick Eisen said it's the best in all of NFL. We talk about the draft. We talk about Jimmy G. We talk about that pitcher behind Ben. Make sure it doesn't happen again. And the Niners, hopefully, will they go back to the Super Bowl? So tune in right now. Hey, what's up, Kyle?
What's up, boys? How you guys doing?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Do I need to be on video?
Okay, Boogie, get us on video, bud. Come on.
I want it. All right.
Give me We've got second. Great green damn, screens damn, behind chill, us.
Man. I don't have a green screen. Give me one second. How the all fuck right. do I do this?
How do you want us to address you?
Yeah,
there we go.
Right. Yeah.
How do you See, want
look
us to
at, look at this. Sir Kyle is good? No. Just Kyle's fine. Kyle Madsen. Right.
Cool.
Nice. Well, no more Seahawk talk. I'm originally from the Bay. Ben's from Seattle. He just wants to get the Seahawks on our pod and talk Russell Wilson. But today, it's Niner Nation. I love it. Can't wait.
Since you threw it out already, I'm going to really come with the fire right here.
Too soon, dog.
Wow.
Way too soon. Came with it. Since you already came with it. By the way, I think we've won 10 out of the last 12 in all time. I think we're 27-16 against the Niners. So.
Yeah, but you're on the way down. We're on the way up. So
absolutely
that's all good.
Not. Yeah. Absolutely not. The NFC Championship runs through Seattle.
Wow. Wow.
No, the nice. NFC Championship game was in San Francisco last year, man.
That's very true. Touche. Touche.
So Rich Eisen last week said the 49ers, you could argue, had the best offseason of any football team in the NFL. Can you talk about some of the moves that you liked? And
yeah, I think saying they had the best offseason in the NFL might be a little extreme, especially just talking like typically that question is regarding like this season. And I think when you talk about teams that got significantly better, you have to look at like the Buccaneers, the Patriots by signing Cam Newton. I don't know if they'll be better, but they'll certainly be different. The Cowboys, I think, had a really good offseason. The Dolphins had a really nice offseason. So in terms of getting better for 2020, I don't think that's the case for the 49ers. But Rich Eisen's point was the Niners swapped DeForest Buckner for the number 13 pick, who is a high-priced player at a not-premium position. And instead of letting him walk in free agency and maybe getting a third-round comp pick, the Niners get a top 13 pick, wind up effectively drafting his replacement so they have a cost-controlled option at that position for the next 4 years. Now, whether Kinlaw be as good as Buckner, we'll see. Selected Brandon Ayuk, also in the first round, who should conceivably, if he tracks the way Debo Samuel did last year, I mean, we saw Debo early in the year. He wasn't as effective down the field. He was more of a kind of like screens and jet sweeps and stuff. But right around that Seattle game in week 10, when Emmanuel Sanders was dealing with his rib injury and George Kittle was out, Samuel really broke out. And I think if Ayuk follows that kind of same track, the Niners will have a replacement for Emmanuel Sanders and they'll be in a spot to be Super Bowl contenders again and conceivably set themselves up nicely for the next 4, 5, or 6 years. So that's why they had a nice offseason. I don't think they had the best offseason in the NFL. There's so many different ways it could backfire, whereas I think there are a lot of teams who got better for right now. Agree a little bit with Rich Eisen, but going into this year, I can't.
I'm a Niners homer, so I'll agree with Rich Eisen. I read somewhere, I think the Niners made 7 trades during draft day. They didn't draft in their original draft position. So every move they made, they drafted a new position. Yeah. And then when they got Kinlaw, Ben and I were joking. We're like, they're going to draft the wide receiver that the Raiders don't take. And then CeeDee Lamb was on the board and Judy. But then they drafted Kinlaw. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what you know about Kinlaw and what you think he'll bring to the table?
Yeah, he's big. He's physical. He's super athletic. His numbers at South Carolina weren't awesome because they were playing him so often out of position. They had him playing nose tackle. And as you guys probably know, you're not going to get a ton of production from nose tackle just because of what your job is. But when you look at his tape, there's a lot of times where he lines up over a guard and just pushes the guard 6 yards deep. And that happens a lot. I don't think it'll happen as much in the NFL, but I think that he brings a similar skill set to DeForest Buckner, just in terms of his size and his length and his power and stuff. And if he can right away be 70% of the player Buckner was, 65-70% at the cost that he is, I don't think the defensive line will take a significant step back. Like I said, some questions about his motor and some questions about his overall production. But like I said, I think a lot of that has to do with the position he was playing in college. And the Niners will put him in a position at the three technique where his skill set will shine a little bit more.
Now, if we talk about the other first round pick, Brandon Ayuk, who will replace Emmanuel Sanders, they'll have Debo once he comes back from his injury. How do you see Brandon fitting into Kyle Shanahan's offense?
A lot of the same ways Debo Samuel does, I think. Like, you hear the word positionless a lot, and I think Ayuk fits that. He didn't run the ball as frequently in college as Debo did at South Carolina. But Ayuk is every bit as explosive. His tape is littered with short catches that go for a ton of yards. I think Pro Football Focus had him leading the country in yards after the catch last year at like 9.9 or 9.1. I forget the exact number, but it is a lot of yards after the catch. And so I think in that respect, he'll be a lot like Debo. I don't know if he's as physical after the catch, but it's short throws, bubble screens, slants, and let him work with the ball in his hands. So I think he'll be a little bit different from Sanders in that respect, because one of the things that made Emmanuel Sanders so good is how tough he is. You saw it in, oh my gosh.
Denver.
No, I forget what game it was. But
San Diego.
There was a specific game, Fresno, that the Niners played last year. Where he had his broken ribs and he made a tough catch over the middle, and I can't remember the game, and that's frustrating. But I don't know if Ayuk will bring that level of toughness, but I do think he's better with the ball in his hands, especially at this point in his career, with Sanders being in his mid-30s. So I think that he may not be an exact replacement for Emmanuel Sanders, but I think he's just another weapon that Garoppolo can get the ball to on short throws, and he can work after the catch.
And then the Niners drafted later in the draft. Are there any players, potential sleepers in the late rounds that you think could have an impact this year?
Colton McKivitz, the right tackle from West Virginia, could actually start at right guard. I don't know if I'd place money on that necessarily, but super big and really physical and really tough. And I think that skill set that he has will translate better to guard. So we'll see how that shakes out. That'll be one of the things that I'm watching in camp really closely, or whatever version of camp we get. But Juwan Jennings from Tennessee, the wide receiver, he's super slow. Like, not wide receiver. Like, he ran a 4.72, which is like alarmingly slow. But he's
you could run.
Yeah, no, not quite. I had never watched him before. I don't watch a ton of Tennessee football. But when I was watching him after they drafted him, it's like a rock fight every time he makes a catch. He's super tough. He's really good at like walling off defenders. He's a big bodied guy. He played quarterback in high school. Broke tackles, is again from Pro Football Focus, broke tackles on 51% of his catches last year. Like, he's just super hard to get on the ground. He's not really fast, but he picks up a ton of yards after the catch because he's really hard to tackle. He has a kind of like running back mentality with the ball in his hands. So I don't know if he'll make the team, because running a 4.72 and having success in the NFL at receiver is really tough. And it's not one of those things like Brandon Ayuk ran a 4.5, but when you watch him, it's clear he's way faster than that.
Yeah.
But Juwan Jennings looks slow. There's a role for him. I just don't know. The Niners have so many different receivers that I don't know if he makes the team right away. But if he does, it's because he did carve out a role as a really effective after the catch guy. You talk about like a big bodied slot receiver, really good at contested catches. I could see him carving out a role like that for sure.
And then the draft day trade that surprised me the most was picking up, you know, 7-time all pro Trent Williams, slide him in to replace Joe Staley. Great pass protector. You'll need him against Chandler Jones. You need him against Aaron Donald. Also good blocker as well. What do you see in Trent Williams' game that he may be able to add that Joe Staley didn't have, or maybe Joe lost as he got older?
Probably just some athleticism. Like, Trent Williams is super athletic. Kyle Shanahan had a quote during the State of the Franchise where he said that Trent Williams could probably play 3-tech on the defensive line, which is pretty wild. And you can see it. Like, just watch. I know workout videos aren't the end-all be-all, but some of the stuff he's capable of doing at his size is pretty impressive. And that's not to say that Joe Staley wasn't an excellent athlete in his own right. He certainly was. You're getting a guy who's 4 or 5 years younger, still conceivably in his prime, and playing for one more big contract. I certainly don't think the Niners got worse at the position. Worst case, they moved laterally, and it wouldn't surprise me if they got a little bit better at that spot. It's tough to quantify because it's on the offensive line, but it wouldn't surprise me if their line's a little bit better next year.
Joe Staley's listening too, Kyle.
So just okay, good. Good. I'm gonna throw a ton of shade. I don't think Joe Staley's great. No, he's great.
Now, if we move to Jamal Adams, he's on the opposite coast, but disgruntled safety. He's listed the Niners. He's listed Ben Seahawks as well. And some other teams as some potential destinations. Do you think the Niners will make a move for him?
Okay, first of all, didn't the Seahawks just get Quandre Diggs for like 10 cents?
We're one player away, Kyle. We're one player away.
So silly. No, you have the players. Russell Wilson, just use him. Like, let him play football.
So you're saying Jimmy's not very good. That's where you're headed.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. Yeah, that's exactly what I said. No.
No, no. Do you think the Niners will make a move to get Jamal Adams? Or is this just all speculation?
No. I just, given everything they've done over the last 3 years since John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan came in, it's all been building with like 2, 3, 4 years down the line in mind. That's why they traded DeForest Buckner. It's why unloaded all that draft capital to get Trent Williams, who's on the last year of his deal. It's why they've restructured deals to make sure that they can fit Kittle under the cap. They've made all these, everything they've done to this point has run counter to trading a top draft pick for a safety who's going to cost top of market money at a non-premium position. And they've already traded a third rounder to get Trent Williams. So if they trade for Jamal Adams, not only are they going to now have to pay Jamal Adams and George Kittle, but they're going to have Fred Warner coming up on a contract extension. Jimmy Garoppolo, if he plays, if he improves, like if he takes that second year jump under Shanahan and has a really, really good year, all of a sudden he's probably looking at an extension. And you don't know what the salary cap's going to look like, because the reality is, because of the pandemic and fans not being in the stands, I think it was Ian Rappaport reported that it was going to be like a $3 billion loss at least if fans don't attend games, and that's going to affect the salary cap. So I just don't see the Niners doing it. They have Richard Sherman, Emmanuel Mosley, Akella Witherspoon, and K'Wan Williams are all going to be free agents. So they got to figure out what they're doing at corner. Jaquaski Tartt's going to be a free agent. I mean, they have so many other moving parts. Getting rid of a premium draft pick to get a player at a non-premium position just doesn't. An expensive, a guy who's going to be expensive, just doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
We'll take him on the cheap.
Yeah, and plus Tartt and Jimmy Ward together, you know, they played fine, and the Niners, I think, were ranked one or two pass defense last year. So,
yeah, they're not, and Jamal Adams is phenomenal. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say he's not good, but he would improve their defense. But what they prioritize on that side of the ball, it just got none of it really adds up.
So last question, then I'll throw it over to Big Ben. Deebo Samuel's got hurt this offseason. Can you talk about his injury and his road to recovery?
Yeah, I always preface stuff like this. I'm not a doctor. I know it's surprising because I do wear glasses, so a lot of people think I'm very smart. No, it's an injury that Trent Taylor had last year, a Jones fracture. The important thing to note is the fracture itself didn't keep Taylor out for the year. He had a bunch of complications from surgeries. I think he wound up having 5. And that's why he wound up being out for the season. Deebo says he'll be back in 10 weeks. It was reported 12 to 16. Given how conservative the Niners training staff is, it wouldn't surprise me if it's closer to 16 than it is to 10, because that foot injury, from what I understand, is a repetitive motion injury where the bone just kind of cracks from stress. If you're a receiver, you need your feet. Like a foot injury for a receiver is brutal. A
guy like Richard, that guy from Tennessee that runs a 5'8" 40.
Yeah, no. It's like faster actually. But yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if they really make sure that thing is good to go before he's back on the field. I'm anticipating them playing their first 2 or 3 games without him, just because, like I said, their training staff has been so conservative with these injuries, making sure not only those guys are recovered, but that they're going to be able to play without re-injuring it. So it's worth watching. I don't know that for sure. That's just kind of the timeline I'm operating with. Maybe he's back in 10 weeks and he's fine, because everybody heals differently. But history kind of says that it takes a little longer than that.
All right, Kyle. Sir Madsen, Kate Boogie. There's a concept of Super Bowl hangover. We've all talked about it. We've heard about it. Niners have only lost 2 Super Bowls before. Mm-hmm. This last year, and they would have made it back in 2013 if not for the tip behind
me. Oh.
So my question to you, is it Super Bowl or bust this year for the Niners? What's the perception of the Niners fans? Is it the bandwagon full? What are you hearing out of the organization?
Yeah, Super Bowl or bust implies to me that like they would do something like go trade for Jamal Adams because they think their window's small. But the organization thinks that they're building a championship window that is several years wide. They're not approaching this season like if they don't win it this year, they're never going to win it.
Right.
You know, if you're a team like the Buccaneers who have a 43-year-old quarterback, then maybe you're looking at it like that. But so I think that the Super Bowl is their goal for sure. I think they want to shake that Super Bowl hangover stigma and I think they'd be just the ninth team to lose and then go back. It's difficult, and I think it's what the team wants to do, but I don't think it's an abject failure if they don't go back to the Super Bowl because it is so difficult. Like you look at their season last year, and as close as they were to being 15-1, they were equally close to being like 9-7. Yeah. And that's, I think there's a lot of teams like that where one or two bounces goes the other way. And all of a sudden you're looking at a completely different season. So, take the Niners and Seahawks, and this is not to be like throw shade or anything, but if Jacob Hollister falls one inch further this way, the Niners probably aren't in the Super Bowl last year because they're going on the road for the wild card game. So that's what seasons come down to. And to have back-to-back years where everything kind of goes your way the way it has to in a football season is really difficult. But they maintained a ton of continuity this year, and they did that on purpose. And that's typically beneficial in a normal year. I think it's going to be especially beneficial in a year like this where there's either going to be a shortened or no training camp. Off-season, in-person off-season activities have already been eliminated. So having as much continuity as possible is going to be huge. And the Niners are one of the most, I think ESPN ranked them as having the fourth best continuity in the NFL, is the best in the NFC. It wouldn't be a huge surprise to me if they were representing the NFC in the Super Bowl again, but it's very difficult to do that. So I don't think it's necessarily Super Bowl or bust.
And the bandwagon's still open if you want to jump on, Ben.
Easy. Back to the Hollister comment. That's also why we drafted two tight ends and signed Greg Olsen. So
it did workouts where it's just like you ran into a thing and you saw
exactly. They went and measured Hollister and said, "Are you this much taller?" Yes, you're on the team. Apparently. Okay, Boogie. I looked at the Jep chart a little bit for the Niners. I actually say a lot, and I try to find some holes here. And I look at it and I say that youthfulness around the wide receiver position is probably the thing that stands out most to me. Mm-hmm. You talked about Debo maybe not being back, the hesitancy around potentially bringing him back. Talk to me about what's a wide receiver corp look like, and should they bring back T.O.?
Yes, always bring back T.O. That's if Debo is not ready for week one, I think you see them lean a little more heavily on Brandon Ayuk than they'd like to, but I'm guessing he would be the guy that they go to and just try and get him the ball in his hands and, you know, like they did with Debo last year, screens and slants and jet sweeps and just try and kind of let him be a playmaker. And you can see a lot of Kendrick Bourne, who's developed into a reliable receiver over the last couple seasons. What you said is hitting the nail on the head. It's not only a young receiving core, but it's a lot of unproven guys. Travis Benjamin, who's played, I think, 17 games the last 2 years. He's been pretty banged up. He came over from the Chargers, has some experience with Kyle Shanahan. He would be like the lone veteran presence. You have a guy like Trent Taylor who's battled injuries the last couple years. Good player, but can he stay healthy? Yeah. Jalen Hurd hasn't played an NFL snap yet. Not only is there a question about his health, but is he good? he had a nice showing in a preseason game against Dallas, but preseason games don't really tell you anything, especially week one. So there's a lot of talent there. And if Jalen Hurd hits his ceiling and Trent Taylor hits his ceiling, Travis Benjamin is healthy, like then they're fine. They'll survive. There's zero certainty at the position. And so I think every option is going to kind of be on the table. You know, maybe Dante Pettis figures it out in year three and gets back to being a productive player and they can lean on him a little bit. But if Debo's healthy and playing, I think it's Samuel. I think it's Kendrick Bourne. I think it's Brandon Ayuk are the top three guys. And then from there, it's just who can be consistent, who can be reliable. It's I can't even like rank. I go through and I do depth chart and I try and like draft, put them in order. I try and put them in order of who I think is going to make the team or whatnot. It's those three, and then like your guess is as good as mine. Yeah, because it's going to come down to who performs in the preseason.
Dart at a dartboard. All right, we have to talk Jimmy G when it comes to the Niners. I've always told K. Wynn he can't throw more than 12 yards downfield, but I also found out he took down or he was sacked 36 times last year, third most among pocket passers in the league. Is that a product of the porous offensive line, or is Jimmy G holding the ball too long, and does that change coming into the second year machine?
I guess a little of both, because there were a lot of sacks last year where it's like, dude, you got to get rid of it. You got to throw it away. And I think that's just kind of the nature of the player he is. I think that's it's a lot like his interception rate. I think that's going to be kind of the taking the good with the bad. It's just the good has to be a little bit better to justify that bad sometimes. He holds onto the ball for a long time because he waits for those windows to come open. He relies on a quick release to try and fit the ball in tight windows that other quarterbacks may avoid. And that's great when it works. Like the 3rd and 16 against the Rams to Kendrick Bourne comes to mind. The first one, heavy pressure in his face where a lot of guys probably get rid of it. He waits for Bourne to come open and then fires in between two defenders. They complete it. They go on to win that game. But then you have countless other examples where he's either taking sacks or he's throwing bad interceptions because he's not throwing it away. I think the improvements with Garoppolo this season are going to come with recognizing when to get rid of it, maybe seeing routes develop a little bit earlier. That's the thing. I work at a sports talk radio station in the Bay Area, and a lot of people want to criticize Kyle Shanahan's play calling for how the Super Bowl went or the end of the Super Bowl went. But the fact of the matter is there were a couple plays where the receivers were there, Garoppolo just didn't see them, or he saw them late and it allowed Chris Jones to get a hand up and knock it down. I think processing quicker, getting rid of the ball quicker, either to throw it away or to get it to an open receiver is going to be really the big key, because I think he can make all the throws. I don't think it's a lack of arm talent, but I think being confident in his knee after having a torn ACL, I think having a full offseason to gain some confidence on that knee is going to be big. But then just understanding the offense and anticipating his throws a little bit better.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. Jimmy has all the talent. It's just the confidence within him. I'm going to switch to the defensive side of the ball, Kyle. The Niners had the second-ranked D statistically, only behind the Patriots, and the Patriots play the Jets and Dolphins twice each year, so I don't call that. Honestly, this defense feels a lot like my Seahawks back in the day, where you kind of knew who was coming in exactly. Defense wins championships. Back to the Ravens, who beat you guys in the Super Bowl. If they would say that that's the best defense potentially of all time, I'd have an argument for that. Do you feel that same way about the Niners D this year? Is this the best D they've had, at least on paper and potentially on the field going into the season?
No, because I don't know how good Javon Kinlaw is. And when you take out an all-pro like DeForest Buckner, you are on paper going to be worse. I think DJ Jones is going to be better. He started all 11 games he played last year, former sixth-round pick. I think DJ Jones is a really good player. I think Nick Bosa is going to be better. D Ford had surgery on his knee. He's not going to be an every down kind of guy, but as a pass rusher, he's very, very effective. And then the linebacking core is excellent. I think they might have the best group of starting linebackers in the league with Quan Alexander, Fred Warner, and Dre Greenlaw. So with those guys, if Richard Sherman's going to be playing at even 85% of the player he was last year, he was really, really good. And either Akella Witherspoon or Emmanuel Mosley figures it out and locks down a starting job on the other side, I think they can be just as dominant this year, because that pass rush is going to be there. If D Ford and Nick Bosa are healthy and Javon Kinlaw can provide something on the inside, they're going to be really good again. Their secondary is not going to have to cover for a very long time. That's what we saw last year. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they'll be the second ranked pass defense or the first top ranked pass defense in the league again. But I do think they're going to be very, very good, and they'll have a championship caliber defense.
The Niners have Cam Newton's Pats, Russell Wilson's Hawks, A-Rodge's Pack, and they finish off Week 10 with Drew Brees and or Taysom Hill and the Saints. It's a tough stretch.
Yeah.
Call it the midseason playoffs for the Niners. You have to forecast wins and losses. Okay, Boogie, what does that look like for the Niners over those four games?
Hang on, let me get it in front of me because...
So they got three on the road. The only one at home is on the pack, against the Pack.
Right, that's right. Okay, so Patriots, Seahawks, Packers, Saints. I think they split those four games. I think they beat the Packers because they owned the Packers last year, and I don't think the Packers are going to be better this year. Let's see. I think they still beat the Patriots because I'm not sure Cam Newton is going to be enough to overcome some of the issues they have talent-wise. Like, they still have a pretty bad deficiency of skill position players on that offense, and I'm not sure it's going to be enough for a 31-year-old Cam Newton to overcome. So I think they win those two. I have a tough time believing they go into New Orleans and winning again after winning the way they did last year. And then I think that Seahawks game, it depends a little bit.
You said 2-2. You've already called two losses.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I always pencil in the Seahawks game in Seattle as a loss just because they're so hard to beat there.
There's going to be no fans this year, though.
I think last year, like, I thought – just objectively, like when you watch the two teams, I thought the Niners were way better than the Seahawks last year. I thought going into, had week 17 been happening in Levi Stadium, I'd have been like, oh, they're going to win. But because it was in Seattle, you saw how the game went. Like, the Niners didn't play badly. The Seahawks just at home are really freaking hard to beat because they have Russell Wilson under center. And as long as Russell Wilson's under center, they're going to be good. So that's why I just pencil that in as a loss every year. And if they win it, then so be it. I think the Seahawks will be a little bit better this year. That'll be a fun game for sure. I think they go 2-2 in that stretch.
So you'll pencil in 2-2. All right. Last
cop out, but
last question from me. So I want to talk a little about, you've talked about the offseason, the window getting wider, them not making any strategic moves just to put a lot of salary on the books. So the offseason, this offseason, we only saw one significant contributor in Emmanuel Sanders leave. Kittle's going to get a massive payday. We all know that. Between pending free agents like Tevin Coleman, Hoos, and a guy like Sherm, who may we see and not see on the roster next year from this team?
Ooh, I don't think Tevin Coleman's back. I think whoever wins the starting job between Witherspoon and Mosley and whoever plays well gets re-signed. Sherman, it super depends. Like, it just really depends on how he looks this year. It wouldn't surprise me if K'Wan Williams is gone after this year, just because the secret's kind of out on him. And he's been really good for a while, but now he's really good on a good team. And slot corners are really hard to find. So I it wouldn't surprise me if he gets a pretty big payday. I think they're going to pay Trent Williams, barring any issues where he's not good. I think he's going to be fine, though. I think he gets paid. And then who else is it? I think Juszczyk comes back. It wouldn't surprise me if Jaquaski Tartt is gone after this year, because as I mentioned before, that's not a premium position. And I think that they feel they can fill that with either Tavarius Moore or Marcel Harris or a draft pick, which is why I think they want to hold on to their picks this year, because they are going to have to replace some significant parts after they leave in free agency. If they're signing Trent Williams and George Kittle long-term deals, they're going to be strapped for cash, and they're going to need some premium draft picks to try and find some cheap starters. So Sherman's the big question mark to me, though. Like, so
you get a Larry Fitzgerald deal one year, just, you know, what do you how much do you want to play for type thing?
Yeah, maybe if he's an all pro again, like, then yeah, I think there's a market for him. But I think there's some off the field stuff where he's just so valuable to them that if he can start and play at all, like, I think they're going to try and retain him just because he's been so important, which is such a weird thing to say still.
All right. So we're going to move into the West Coast swing round robin questions, kind of off the cuff. There's really no wrong answer.
That sounds great. I wish I'd
say what you want. So first question, Kyle, you tweeted that you have two 49ers jerseys, Bryant Young and Jerry Rice. If you have to buy another 49ers jersey this year, who's it going to be?
Okay, so real quick, I had those two growing up.
Oh, okay.
I no longer have the Jerry Rice joint. I still have my Bryant Young one. I also own a Chris Borland jersey, and I bought that like 2 weeks before he retired.
Amazing. It was amazing.
It was awful. No, that was my guy, though. If I was going to buy one, I'm a big believer in getting players that, like, not a lot of people are buying jerseys for. I was a big, like, I'm a Warriors fan. I'm a huge Warriors fan. I have a Sean Livingston jersey. Nice. So it'd be a player like that. I love DJ Jones, but he wears number 93, and I don't really rock with that as a jersey number that I'm gonna wear around. Unless like 97's fine because it's Bryant Young. Like, it's Bryant freaking Young. Like, you're just gonna wear his jersey. Jimmy Ward. I would buy a Jimmy Ward jersey. I was on me and my fellow podcast host, the Candlestick Chronicles, Chris Biederman, had this running joke that we were living on Jimmy Ward Island, because last offseason we were just like, yeah, resign him. He's good at football. Like, maybe he gets hurt, but just resign him on a 1-year deal and see if he can stay healthy. And he did, and he was really good. So Jimmy Ward, and it's number 20. That's a strong number.
All right. Favorite dish at Bourbon Steak. And I don't know why they call it Bourbon Pub too, but the Michael Mina restaurant right there next to Levi Stadium.
I've never been.
Okay, perfect. What do you get at In-N-Out?
Ooh, I do. All right, so I try and keep my carb count down for the most part. So I trick myself at In-N-Out. I get a protein-style cheeseburger, ketchup, onions, pickles. Typically raw onions. Sometimes I get them grilled, but typically it's raw with the fries. And then I get a lemon up, which is half 7-Up. Half pink lemonade. And then if depending on like where I'm at or what's going on, I'll get another regular burger. You got to go extra. You got to go extra toast on that bun though. Ketchup, onions, pickles only. Sometimes lettuce, but typically it's ketchup, onions, pickles.
Just so it doesn't get soggy, the extra toast.
Yeah,
just...
exactly. And oh, dude, the extra toast on that bun, are you kidding me? It's
fully wrap it so you can put it in your pocket for a couple hours and you're good.
Exactly.
Got you.
Don't forget animal style as well on those fries.
I do. Oh my gosh, dude. I love an animal style fry. It's so good.
So most likely to happen this year, Oakland A's win a World Series title or the 49ers win a Super Bowl?
Ooh, let's see. I thought going into this season that the A's had the best chance to win a World Series that they've had in my lifetime. I think the A's are really can I say the F word?
Sure.
I think the A's are really fucking good. AJ Puck is awesome. Jesus Luzardo is like, if he's healthy, he's Cy Young stuff. Sean Manaea, the fact that Sean Manaea and Frankie Montas might be the like third and fourth starters.
Yeah, they're deep.
Is ridiculous, dude. They're so good. And then Matt Chapman's one of the three best third basemen in baseball. I think Matt Olson has an argument as the best first baseman in baseball, just defensively and at the plate. If Sean Murphy, their catcher, is what they think he's going to be, they're just not going to have a lot of easy outs in their lineup. And then you combine that with the pitching staff. I think the A's can be as good as any team in the league. So since the 49ers are coming off a Super Bowl loss and it's so hard to go back, I will pick the A's. But if it goes the other way, I wouldn't be shocked.
All right. Kaywin and myself, and I realized after reading this question that we put together, I realized that you guys are generally, I don't know if you have media passes or if you attend the game just as a fan, but Kaywin and myself went to the Monday night game last year against the Browns. And we ended up drinking at the hotel bar across the street and then having like a massive Bud Light, maybe two, before we went in the game. So there was no real concept of tailgate.
Right.
If you're listening, we have our listeners, they're going to a San Fran game. What do you have to do, tailgate or otherwise, for a game?
So I typically
get there 7 hours early.
Yeah, because I do. So I've been both as a fan and now I'm credentialed. So I get there early and I act as a professional. But my mom does, when she goes, she does a little tailgate action out there in Blue Lot 1. That's a lot of fun if you're looking for the generic tailgate atmosphere. Because that's where it's. I don't want to compare it to Candlestick, because it's not quite the same. But it's that style of like, it's just a dirt lot. Everybody's got their tents, their barbecues, the music. People were throwing a football around. If you're looking for a tailgate like atmosphere, Blue Lot 1 is the spot to go. I typically am doing radio stuff beforehand. And then I'll chill in the in that hotel parking lot. I think it's the Hyatt.
Yep.
The Hyatt right there. They have that like tailgate with the food truck and a little bar outside, and they got the tables. I usually meet my mom and her friend that she has season tickets with. I meet them out there before I head into the stadium, and I chat with them. And that's a cool little setup for sure. If I was not credentialed and I was vibing before a game, that'd be the move. Sounds I enjoy like that hotel very much.
Need to hang out with your mom.
I do, dude. I love watching football on my mom, bro. It's the best.
So you mentioned Candlestick. What do you miss the most about Candlestick Park?
Oh, bro, the vibe, dude. And I know that sounds like such a – but we on Candlestick Chronicles, we do this thing called the Old Rush. And what we're doing is we're starting week one of Jim Harbaugh's tenure in 2011 and just kind of going through and picking some games and rewatching them. And I just rewatched that Monday night game against the Steelers. And there is an electricity that Candlestick had that Levi's just doesn't yet. And I think Levi's will get there. The team just hasn't been good enough for long enough. And there haven't been any enough historical moments that have happened there to really get that buzz. It's still a little too sterile and a little too new, but man, I miss just like, I know it was grimy and I know from a like stadium standpoint, it sucked. Like the bathroom lines were long and the concessions lines were long and it was cramped and it was dirty, but dude, there was not a lot of better places to watch football. I mean, it was just, the concrete and the just like, just 65-year-old shit just on the seats.
Yeah.
And like, it felt historical when you were in it. And I wins and losses, you know, you kind of saw everything there. It didn't matter. Just being there was awesome. And I know that's kind of a like, oh, I miss everything about it, but it's kind of what it is.
Do they have troughs?
No.
This might be going a little too deep for the podcast, but what?
No, the Ogun Coliseum has troughs.
Yeah. Okay. It's disgusting. It's gross.
It's real nasty.
The old kingdom used to have little like circle ones where you put your foot down into the...
But the trough does speed up the bathroom line, even though it's disgusting. Hey, you can get more people in there.
Shoulder to shoulder. All right, Bryant Young's going into the 49ers Hall of Fame. Kyle, who's next?
Oh, that's a good question. Joe Staley. Unless this is Frank Gore's last season, which, like, I don't think it is. Like, he's going to play forever.
He's got 10 more in him at least.
No, but let's go off this being Frank Gore's last season. I think Gore and Staley go in together. But if Gore winds up playing, like, churning out another 2 or 3 years, which would be insane, but if he does, I think Staley's the next to go in. And if it's not just Staley, it'll be because they're waiting on Gore to put them in together because they're still really close. And I think that would be a really cool cool thing to see them go in together. So I think that's what they do.
So COVID hits the Niners hard. There's no revenue. There's no fans. They can only sign one of them, Trent Williams or Kittle, next summer. Who you picking?
Kittle. Because he's probably going to be a little cheaper. He's younger. And I know it's difficult to find a really good left tackle, but it's even more difficult to find a super unique tight end like George Kittle. And you can figure it out at left tackle. They would like really have to change a lot of their offense if they didn't have Kittle. So, if I'm picking one, I think it's Kittle, and I'm not even really sure it's like a decision.
I think. All right. Last question. K Boogie, you and K Wynn are both Niners fans. Myself, you can call me a big-ish Seahawks fan. I don't claim to be a 12, but, can we make a little friendly wager? You already referenced putting money on it. We don't have to put money on it, but how about if Seahawks go 2-0, your mom makes us a nice tailgating spread. And in the inverse, if you guys go 2-0, coming up, I'll have my mom make you a nice tailgating spread right outside of CenturyLink.
So here's
the issue. Or we can just FedEx you some In-N-Out burgers straight to work.
Here's the issue with that. my mom would fucking hate you. So
yes, I'm in.
You're not gonna want to eat whatever she's putting out. No, man. If you know, if you guys are out there for Niner Seahawks and she's doing a little tailgate shindig, I'll let you guys know.
We'll bring some nice Merlot. We'll bring some nice.
Dude, you got to, dude. My mom
I'll bring some smoked salmon, some cream cheese. I'll bring all the Northwest accoutrements. She just provides.
You're gonna bring like a Starbucks and some meth. I see.
I'll go get whatever they're growing up at Chop and bring it down. Keep it really local.
Oh, I love it.
Well, Kyle, thanks for coming on the show. We had a blast. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you online and listen to your podcast?
I'm on Twitter at Kyle A. Madsen. My podcast is, like I said, with Chris Biederman. He's the Niners beat writer for the Sacramento Bee. We're at Candlestick Chronicles, just wherever you get your podcasts, Candlestick Chronicles, 49ers podcast. And NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. I'm doing content there too, so. A lot of Niners stuff going on.
Part of Blue Wire Pods.
Yeah, Blue Wire Pods forever.
All right. Okay, Boogie, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks.
Go ahead. Go, my friend.
Take care.
See you guys.